Have your thighs ever chafed? Chafe is no joke, but thanks to Mega Babe, it's also no problem. Mega Babe's Thigh Rescue glides onto skin so that chafe is a thing of the past. Experience what 10,000 five-star reviewers rave about at megababebeauty.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But on balance, they come out in the direction of TRT does not increase the risk of cardiovascular disease. Now there's,
I'm not trying to be a D-bag by pausing it so often. When people ask about cardiovascular disease, and we say this all the time, is it electrical disease? Is it congestive disease? Pump related? Is it hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, of which topical testosterone might be a slight risk if you're really pushing that topical testosterone, that DHT up with your just shave it, bro. Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast. We give you tools to develop a balanced approach for health. I'm Dr. Kyle Gillette.
And I'm James O'Hara, nurse practitioner. We are trying out our first reaction video in the new studio today.
Yep.
And this is reacting to, I guess, first the different titles of these videos, but why testosterone replacement therapy is so dangerous, Dr. Peter Attia. This is on Chris Williamson's podcast.
Yeah, that's a very different question. I assume that Chris or his media guy titles these, but the podcast that he did with our friend Derek with More Plates, More Dates was, what are the real health risks of TRT?
So has TRT gotten more dangerous in the last 8 months?
I don't think so. So when you ask what are the real health risks, it implies that there are not so real or fake health risks. And then when you say why TRT is so dangerous, that's implying that it's dangerous. So why wouldn't they have asked Derek that same question? You could ask the opposite question. Why is it so safe?
You could.
Yeah. If you're thinking about TRT, it's for people who are hypogonadal, which it is much safer for someone who's hypogonadal than.
Yeah. If your doctor gives you a prescription, is your question more likely to be how dangerous is this medication or how safe is this medication?
Yes. And for those wondering, I just had eye surgery, so that's why I'm very sensitive to the light.
All right. Let's take a listen.
Physiologic doses versus a super physiologic dose. And especially in the cases where guys have to get this stuff illegally, then you introduce a whole new layer of contamination and all sorts.
Okay. We're going to get in trouble for pausing this too often, but any steady state testosterone replacement therapy is non-physiologic. I wouldn't call it supra-physiologic, but even if you're at a steady state, 550 nanograms per deciliter, it is not the same as having a natural testosterone of 550 in the morning and then dropping down low in the evening. We'll have Cameron, our media guy, paste up one of my recent popular Instagram posts that shows steady state testosterone versus 20s versus an older male versus lymphatically absorbed testosterone. So already right off the bat, you can't say physiologic versus supra-physiologic TRT when you're talking about subcutaneous. It's all non-physiologic. It's a whole different animal.
Yeah, and also talking about illegal TRT, so people that are getting it from the black market, I think that's a smaller percentage than people would like to think.
People getting it from the black market are getting it from their friend who has a prescription of 200 mgs per week from Empower Pharmacy. We can bleep that out if that's not supposed to be in there. I'm just saying that's where the cookie cutter pill mill TRT clinics get it from in general. If you're listening from Empower, no hate or just a little bit of hate maybe. But anyways, and then they give 100 mgs per week to their buddy and then they take 100 mgs. So most people that are on black market TRT, it's coming from compounding pharmacies. It's just coming from the compounding pharmacy where it costs $20 for 10 mils versus 28 bucks for 10 mils.
So it's not coming from your local bathtub lab.
No, not testosterone. Other compounds are coming from your local bathtub.
And then it's not testosterone replacement.
No, they're just doing steroid cycles.
So things like that. So net, I'm a little concerned, maybe a lot concerned. I also think, you know, there are lots of clinics opening up that are kind of trying to circumvent some of these issues. And again, I think their motivation is to capitalize on an obvious interest, but they do so without, necessarily a nuanced approach to how to do this.
Take me through the risks of TRT. What are they, high level?
So it depends on if we're going to talk about TRT done correctly, do you mean literally TRT, testosterone replacement therapy, or
that and its more malignant offshoots where people start to push dosages and stuff? Well, take us through, you know, the range.
Well, I would say let's start with what's sort of known in the medical world, right? So we'll start with kind of appropriate physician-administered testosterone replacement therapy.
For an appropriately aged individual.
For an appropriately aged individual at an appropriate physiologic dose.
Cool.
Appropriate aged individual. So if you're not, I guess we're going to find out, you have to be 40 for testosterone replacement to be appropriate.
Or physician administered. So this is where you go into the urologist's office once every two weeks
and get a shot of 200 mgs once every 2 weeks. Apparently so. Intramuscular, because subcutaneous testosterones like brand name Xyostin do not. They're
specifically not physician administered.
Yeah. They're patient administered. They're an auto injector. It's almost like physician administered diabetes medications. You have to go to your doctor to get your long acting insulin.
Once a day, twice a day sometimes.
Just go in. Yeah. Are you Tresiba ready?
Okay. So the two big risks that people have historically been concerned with are prostate cancer and heart disease. So an increase in the risk of prostate cancer and an increase in the risk of cardiovascular disease. Both of these have been studied extensively. And I think we can make a very strong and compelling case that testosterone replacement therapy is not increasing the risk of prostate cancer at all. And it may in fact be decreasing the risk slightly. I've done an entire podcast, I think two podcasts on just that topic. That's how nuanced it is. But again, to give you just one example, when we have a guy who has undergone a prostatectomy for prostate cancer, he's had his prostate removed, we will still use testosterone replacement therapy in that guy. So think about that. You have a guy who had prostate cancer. You will still give him testosterone replacement therapy if it's warranted or indicated post-prostatectomy. Now, do you do it and shut your eyes and never look again? Of course not. You're still monitoring his PSA every 3 months, and you're going to look for any sign of recurrence. And if there is, in fact, a recurrence, you would immediately cease it, because what we do know is testosterone would feed prostate cancer. But the point I'm making is around initiation. Is there any evidence that testosterone replacement therapy initiates prostate cancer? The answer is no, there is not. And there is some evidence to the contrary. The cardiovascular.
So we can actually pause that and just delete that, because that's just a very long way to say what we've said many times. We have many comments that we talk about prostates and prostate cancers too much in the podcast. It grows prostate cancer. It does not cause it. That's all we need to say. We can move on and not play that previous clip. Yeah,
I was about to get on a dutasteride rant.
We do that too much too. So yeah. It grows prostate cancer, does not cause it. Let's move on.
Susie's question is a little bit more difficult and the data are a little bit more muddled, but on balance, they come out in the direction of TRT does not increase the risk of cardiovascular disease. Now there's
I'm not trying to be a D-bag by pausing it so often. When people ask about cardiovascular disease, and we say this all the time, is it electrical disease? Is it congestive disease? Pump related? Is it hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, of which topical testosterone might be a slight risk if you're really pushing that topical testosterone, that DHT up with your just shave it, bro. But or are you talking about atherosclerotic disease? I mean, surely he's going to start talking about how all androgens are the inverse of statins.
Yeah. On average, you don't see the two ingredients I see, because people ask me this all the time as well, is, does testosterone increase the risk of coronary artery disease? Like the very astute patients that know exactly what questions they're asking. Say, if your lipids and your blood pressure don't change, probably not.
Correct.
If your blood pressure goes up to 160 systolic and your LDL goes up by 50%, that would be a very outlier and generally a dose-dependent response. Like that's not what you would see on average. Then, yes, I think your risk of heart disease does go up.
And what he will also likely mention, I assume, is for people who are truly hypogonadal, profoundly low testosterone levels and profoundly low estrogen levels, that extra estrogen from the TRT is cardioprotective, but not if you're on a whole bunch of anastrozole or aromatase inhibitor with it.
There's a big trial that was completed last year called the TRAVERSE trial that gave men androgel, so topical testosterone, and followed them for, I want to say, 3 or 4 years. And there was no increase in the incidence of ASCVD, atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. But there is, so at face value, that study was taken to mean, look, we have one more study, the biggest and best, that demonstrated no increase in the risk of cardiovascular disease with TRT. So the debate should be settled once and for all. I did a podcast on this, wrote a long newsletter on this, and the long and short of it is that's a, in my view, that's a slightly premature conclusion because I don't think the TRAVERSE study was done perfectly.
No study is done perfectly, but in this long newsletter and podcast, there was no significant weight given to the DHT increase from topical testosterone, which is going to lead to relatively more ventricular hypertrophy, more sympathetic inputs to the nodes. And we'll also link the podcast, Cameron, if you can put the podcast that we did that mentions this trial and probably 8 to 10 other trials we did whenever that came out. I think we titled it an emergency podcast. But again, if you're looking at risk of arrhythmia and AFib, which did appear to be a slightly increased risk of that study, perhaps what Peter is going to mention here is if they had studied it with subcutaneously administered testosterone or Zyostid, we wouldn't have seen that risk of electrical heart disease, you know, arrhythmia or AFib, and we wouldn't have seen as much of that VTE risk. However, almost all the people in the study were on statins and were on blood pressure medications, and I believe 50% were on aspirin. So let's see if he mentions that.
Most importantly, it did not give men a high enough dose, in my view. So the men started out very hypogonadal with a total testosterone of somewhere between 1 and 300 nanograms per deciliter, but they were only replaced to about 600 nanograms per deciliter. And while that's a...
He didn't even mention the DHT. Their total androgen pools are more than high enough. Their DHT was probably over 100. If they were on dutasteride, their total T would have been 1,000.
Yeah, you would probably feel quite androgenic with the total T of 600, and that puts your DHT at probably north of 100, 150 on a androgel product like this. And that's also a steady state. So the androgel is sort of time-released over about 24 hours. It appears to be relatively stable. It's not exactly apples to apples with like a Versa-based compounded testosterone where you would get a higher concentration, higher total T, but you don't necessarily want that if the DHT is going to be going up quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. The concept of total androgen pool is very important to understand. I've made several recent Instagram posts on this. But yeah, exactly like you say, this is a very androgenic dose. So maybe it was underdosed from an anabolic perspective and they didn't get as much lean muscle mass and metabolic benefit from that. But honestly, I don't think that's what he's saying. I think he just doesn't understand the concept of total androgen pool.
A reasonable rate of replacement, I don't think it represents what's happening in the world. I mean, we replace patients to higher than that. We replace patients to 800 or 900. We're technically tracking free testosterone and not total testosterone, but usually to get somebody in the range of where we think.
I mean, how can we not pause and talk about how inaccurate free testosterone assays are? Hopefully they're calculating the free testosterone from SHBG.
Yeah, or at least getting the equilibrium dialysis. But even then, I would tend to trust the trend and then the calculation more because I've seen some numbers that change in ways we know that the binding cannot change.
Yeah. I know that Peter and his urologist friends do not like to use 5-alpha reductase inhibitors. So perhaps they should consider replacing less than a total testosterone of 800. If they're letting the DHT run up to 150, 200, and if you're scrotally applying it, your DHT can be 300 or 400. So there's a lot of concepts to think about here, but the takeaway here should be don't go buy free testosterone assays unless it's an equilibrium dialysis or equilibrium ultrafiltration, which is not the normal lab. The normal lab is not going to be near as accurate as just calculating from an SHPG and a total testosterone.
What I'm hearing so far is the biggest risk of TRT is that the dose is too low.
Sounds pretty dangerous.
That was the leading question, and here we are.
A good free testosterone is, we will see a total testosterone that's easily in the 800, 900 nanogram per deciliter range. So it's possible the TRAVERSE trial only answered the question, does low dose, or as one of my analysts put it, does testosterone light replacement therapy increase the risk of cardiovascular disease? And I think there we can say the answer is probably no.
Okay. And what about testosterone replacement therapy when it's done badly?
Yeah. So I think if you even think about it in the medical setting, I think testosterone can be given to very super physiologic levels. And I see patients getting super physiologic levels all the time. They come into our practice, they've been treated at some T clinic, and they walk in with a free testosterone of 35 nanograms per deciliter, which is like twice what you would consider reasonable. And you know, part of the problem is we don't really know what the long, everything goes out the window with what I said earlier. Now, can I say that that doesn't increase the risk of prostate cancer initiation? I can't say that because I don't have the data. Can I really say that doesn't increase the risk of cardiovascular disease? No, I can't. It's also, by the way, creating a lot more erythrocytosis. So those people are making red blood cells at an alarming rate, and they need to be monitored very closely for increased blood viscosity.
Is that, I have a friend of a friend who donates blood every month.
Yeah,
is that,
that's why.
Because they're just making too much and it's too thick?
Correct.
Wow. I mean, good for the blood donation people.
Yeah. And again, the question is, if you have to give blood every month, if your bone marrow is so revved on that you have to give blood every month, do we run the risk that you're going to convert into polycythemia vera at some point, which is a disease now where all of a sudden you can't shut that process off? So
that's a bit of a wild card.
So yeah. Donating blood more is unlikely to convert you into polycythemia vera, which is a pseudo-neoplastic pathology, which if you have a JAK2 mutation, you're certainly at higher risk of polycythemia vera and erythrocytosis from TRT and other mutations, which, by the way, you can test on a Invitae. I believe it's only $250, even if your insurance doesn't cover it, to genetically test if you're predisposed to those things. But as I'm sure you're about to say, test for stickiness of platelets. There's not a great way to assess thromboxane A2 activity. You can test APTTs. I mean, you can test platelet count, but you can have a very normal platelet count and you cannot have erythrocytosis. And if your DHT or other very androgenic steroids are high, you can have sticky platelets.
Yeah. Or if you take Clomid for your TRT and your platelet count goes up and your APTT is not changing, I mean, that is also going to present a risk for VTE.
Yeah.
So I've yet to come across a case report of polycythemia or erythrocytosis converting into polycythemia vera. I know there's a lot of people that sort of get those terms mixed up or say that, you know, polycythemia shouldn't even be called that because it sounds so much like this. And it is confusing for the layperson, but polycythemia vera is very different than polycythemia that's secondary to TRT, although we do see when that threshold crosses 54% for the hematocrit, I think it's around a 30% increase relative risk. Mm-hmm. Absolute risk still quite low.
Yeah.
But about a 30% increase relative risk, and that's just with TRT, of someone getting a blood clot in the leg, a DVT or a PE. So the risk is there. There is evidence to support that, but that doesn't mean that every single person who has an increase in their red blood cell count is going to develop sticky blood.
Correct, especially if half of them are on aspirin. One other point with that is the type of TRT that you're on and how long you're on it and how long you've been donating blood has a lot to do with iron homeostasis in the body. So when you start TRT, you might have a ferritin and a normal CRP, no other acute phase reactants or inflammatory markers elevated, because ferritin can be falsely high if you have various inflammatory markers high, For example, even platelets is an inflammatory marker. Acute phase reactant, as we call them. So let's say this is your true ferritin, which you can think of as the stockpile of iron throughout your entire body, bones, liver, muscles, etc. You can go from 300 down to 150, just starting TRT from that extra little bit of red blood cell production. But there are very few people that can tolerate monthly blood donations. Most people, especially those without hereditary hemochromatosis or HFE, cannot donate blood every month without getting iron deficient. It is extremely common that we see all the things that Peter and Chris are discussing. They come on, their free androgen index is too high, and they do have erythrocytosis, not polycythemia. They have secondary erythrocytosis, and they also have deficient ferritins, and they feel fatigued.
Yeah. Fatigued with a total test of 1500.
Yeah.
So, it becomes self-sustaining even once you've come off the TRT.
Yeah. Again, I'm not suggesting that that's happening. What I'm asking is we don't know, right? And there's just a big unknown there. The other thing is once you start to get into these super physiologic doses, you start to run into other issues around a lot of estrogen and a lot of DHT. So you'll see these men who are on these super physiologic doses of testosterone also showing up on 5-alpha reductase inhibitors, which we could talk about why I'm not a huge fan of those, and on aromatase inhibitors, which I'm also not a fan of.
Is that to stop gyno and hair loss?
Yes.
Right.
And obviously I'm not a guy who takes hair loss.
Bummer. I've been on non-super physiologic doses of testosterone and got gyno and hair loss.
Yeah. So we are obviously big fans of 5-alpha reductase inhibitors, mostly dutasteride, but for the right patient, finasteride as well. And we have talked at length about it. If you look in YouTube or Spotify or whatnot, we've probably done 24 episodes specifically on this. And we've also responded directly to the episode that Peter did with the urologist that's also anti-5-alpha reductase inhibitor, which also misquoted things about dutasteride and its affinity for type 3 versus type 2 isoenzymes compared to finasteride. But anyway, the concept of, yes, if people come in on a super physiologic dose, you think about it the same way as someone who comes in what you consider a physiologic dose or a steady state dose, is you think about every organ system in the body. How is it benefiting them? How is it detrimenting them? Can you get 98 or 99% of the benefit without most of the detriment if you scale back their dose? In most cases, yes. But in some cases, they're actually better off still being left at high normal, which I would also agree, you know, a total testosterone of 900 if you let your DHT run sky high, like Peter apparently lets himself and his patients run high. And if you would look at that total androgen pool, you're on a little dutasteride, your total testosterone is 1100 and your DHT is half of what it would be, then you have less sympathetic input, better sleep, better hair, healthier prostate, and the people who say finasteride causes prostate cancer, talking about dutasteride here, a strong inhibitor of type 3 isoenzyme, which is almost always overexpressed in prostate cancer and has data that it can help prevent recurrence of prostate cancer, you have even more benefit. You can still be on that high physiologic dose, if you will, have no downsides. So it's like the best of both worlds. I would agree that we are not fans of aromatase inhibitors. There's a lot of ways to control estrogen, whether that's calcium deglucurate, whether that's dechiroinositol, whether that's actually controlling prolactin.
Or even just scaling back the dose or increasing the frequency of the injections, yep, assuming someone's on an injectable form.
Yeah, that's one of the best ways to do it. But anytime you switch someone from topical to subcutaneous to intramuscular to intranasal to lymphatic, that is altering the amount of DHT, testosterone, and estradiol you have. And if you're worried about side effects from too much DHT and too much estrogen, do not have them on topical testosterone. Have them on subcutaneous testosterone, for goodness sakes.
Lost very seriously, but I think it's a mistake. To take a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor for hair loss. I think there are far better strategies if it matters. And I think, you know, even though the risk of finasteride syndrome or post-finasteride syndrome is low, it's not zero and it's potentially irreversible. And this is I think in a young man taking finasteride, again, if you're listening to this and you're on finasteride and you have no issues, you're fine. It's something that if you hasn't kicked in within, you know, 6 months, it's not going to kick in. But we do see men who have like a permanent loss of libido. That's reported in the literature. That's what finasteride syndrome is. Yeah. Okay. So basically there's something about blocking DHT that might not be a great idea.
Permanent loss of libido would be bad. What else haven't we spoken about when it comes to exogenously increasing testosterone levels, fertility?
Yeah. Well, there's another thing that I think is when you, yeah, fertility for sure. Right. So at, once you give exogenous testosterone, you're going to cut down on endogenous production, including sperm production, and therefore you're going to see a reduction in fertility. And at some point that's retrievable, and at some point it becomes more and more difficult to retrieve. So it depends on the person's age when they start and what their testicular reserve is, but you know, generally speaking, 2 years of exogenous testosterone can spell the end of endogenous production and therefore a lifetime dependency, which again, we do that all the
2 years.
Testicular reserve, like ovarian reserve. That is not a thing, by the way. You don't have a testicular reserve. You have testicular size and you have how many seminiferous tubules do you have
left? Leydig cell function and count.
If you have a complete aplasia you could be born with a like a Sertoli cell aplasia or a Leydig cell aplasia, and you can atrophy them over time. But it's not like you're born with a set number of sperm, and then like once you use them, you go through andropause.
Yeah, and I guess 2 years is a bit of a small time frame to measure like the aging of an organ system and the decline in function. Because if someone's like, well, what happens if I go on TRT and then I don't like it and I go off? It's like, well, you probably go right back to your baseline. If we're talking about 3 months or 2 years or probably even 5 years, as long as their health is relatively stable. But if you're talking about like 30 years of tissue aging, say you go on at age 40, you go off at age 70, then I suppose you do have a bit of a decline in what you'd be able to produce. Mm-hmm. But
how long was Vigorous Steve on TRT or androgens before coming completely off?
That's a good case study.
He was something like 15, decades. I think it was either 15 or 20 years. I'm not sure how much HCG or gonadotropin or even enclomiphen or whatnot that Steve took while on, but I don't think it was significant. Vigorous Steve did come completely off TRT after being on for decades and recovered his natural testosterone without any other aids up to, I believe, about 700, and also remodeled a lot of the fatty liver disease that he had developed over time. It's a lifelong commitment to optimizing your androgens and improving them, but it's not a lifelong dependency on testosterone replacement. And as many people know, testosterone replacement is not a good contraceptive. Always check your sperm counts before. You can go to services like Give Legacy and just freeze some away for a rainy day. If you're on finasteride or dutasteride, wash that out. We've done lots of podcasts on fertility. We don't need to go too much into it today.
The time, like if a guy is old enough and decides it's time to go on TRT, we fully accept that. And there's no risk of being on lifetime T for life within physiologic doses. But for a guy who's young, that might be an enormous risk. And we see this all the time where guys who are doing this in their 20s decide they want to have kids in their 30s and they can't.
What else haven't we said?
I'm not sure. Maybe from this patient side, that's true, that they decide they want to have kids and they are not successful in reproduction. But I think that's just because they don't have access to the knowledge and interventions that they would need.
Yeah. It's more likely that you'll be semi-permanently infertile from orchitis or STDs or other bacteria that are inflaming your testicles that don't get antibiotic treatment soon enough. That's much more likely to lead to clinically significant infertility. If it's just androgens, even supraphysiologic androgens, not just TRT, like even if someone blasts gear all the way through their 20s, if they completely come off just cold turkey, Pete Rubish style, then they generally have no fertility issues after a long period of time of suffering. Or if they come to a clinic like ours and they get restored naturally, or even if they're on a little bit of TRT and they conceive that way, or if they're just on a bit of HCG, like I have been, then no issues conceiving children in my 30s, done so 3 times. So
yeah,
that's obviously an N of one, but if given enough time with no other predisposing pathologies or things like previous orchitis, we have excellent success with regaining fertility on and off TRT. It's almost like there's a test, like a Yo home fertility test, that you can see your sperm counts while you're on and off, depending on your regimen.
Yeah, it's a very cost-effective way to go about it. I think that one thing he said that's important is, you know, testing fertility, or that you had said, is testing fertility prior to going on testosterone. Because if there's an underlying issue and you're a seemingly healthy guy, but you've got some lower testosterone levels, maybe even hypogonadal levels, if you have not conceived, or you have suspicion that there may be low sperm count, something suboptimal there, or even just to make sure, so that if 5-10 years down the road you want to conceive, that there's not an underlying issue, then it's much better to address and know about that, because things can become time sensitive. If you're in your 20s, you're probably not thinking about the timeline of reproduction. When you get into your 30s, it's more front and center of mind for many people.
Yeah, that's a good point. We'll link, regardless if you're in 20s or 30s or whatever, or 60s, we'll link our Give Legacy, the company that we mentioned, we'll link that below, and then we'll link the Yo Home Fertility Test. I believe it's like $15 per test if you buy 6 of them at a time.
Yeah.
For Yo Home Fertility. It doesn't really tell you if you have a really low count. It just tells you if you have a normal range count for men who have conceived. But it's more qualitative than quantitative, but it's also a lot cheaper than paying a couple $100 for a sperm test. So a lot of people do that first. And then when things look like they're likely ready to be frozen, then they'll do the legacy test. The legacy test also offers testing for STIs, most of them. Although we should actually post those, not for ordering, but just for reference. My recommended STI panel for anybody between the ages of whenever they're active up through really at least 40 is what a lot of societies recommend. And then even potentially longer than that for some people.
Yeah. Anyone in a high risk situation.
About the risks of TRT.
I think there's another method of delivery using clomiphene and clomiphene. And these are drugs that have the advantage of preserving fertility. They work by inhibiting estrogen receptors in the hypothalamus that trick the brain into thinking you need more testosterone. So now the brain, via the pituitary, starts producing more follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone, and you end up increasing endogenous production. Again, I might be an unusual skeptic in this regard, but my concern with that approach typically centers around, yes, you raise testosterone, but are you getting the full benefits of testosterone? Because I think one of the benefits of testosterone is the benefit in the brain. And if you're now blocking estradiol's impact in the brain, certainly anecdotally, there's questions about whether you're taking away some of the benefits of testosterone, including mood and libido.
Would you have any concern?
Yeah. Clomiphene and clomiphene definitely will. I mean, they're used as fertility agents, and for that purpose, they definitely do their job. They definitely work in those cases where they are being prescribed as a TRT. Even I look beyond the brain as, do you want chronic estrogen agonism in the liver? And do you want chronic estrogen antagonism in the brain and the ocular tissue and other tissues that aren't completely mapped out yet?
The answer is no to all of those things. Yeah. You do not want agonism in the liver, even if it's just because of its effect on platelets and SHBG. That's where its clot risk comes in. So short term, for somebody who's not on TRT, a SERM can be reasonable for a matter of weeks. But on TRT, it does not make any sense to add in whatsoever unless you're coming off TRT. And then you can use it for a couple weeks if you think it's going to be particularly hard to get gonadotropin, specifically as you mentioned, the hypothalamus releases gonadotropin-releasing hormone. That can be a bit more difficult to get because even if you take gonadirelin or HCG, that's not going to help that come back online. So as a little bit of a jump start, it's reasonable, but as a replacement, it is terrible. There's many other options with all of the same benefits and less downsides.
And for people being on Clomid for a long amount of time, is that something that you think shouldn't be used?
I would feel very strongly about people not being on Clomiphene or Clomid for a long period of time for another reason, which is it really increases the production of a sterol called desmosterol. And the reason for that, there's a lot of problems with that, including potentially an increase in the risk of atherosclerosis, increase in the risk of cataracts and things of that nature. So I think long-term use of Clomiphene is probably not a good idea. The drug was never intended to be used long-term. It's a fertility drug. So it's intended to be used short-term. And I think short-term rises in desmosterol are not problematic, but lifetime increases or many years of increase, I think, would be. And there's a drug that increased desmosterol levels in the 50s and 60s that was actually pulled from the market because of the increase in cataracts and the increases in cardiovascular disease.
I think that's the end of it.
Oh, sounds good. That's the end.
Yep. That's it.
Yeah. That's a good summary of Clomid and SERMs. Yeah. Sounds like we agree. We can probably even cut out that last part.
Aromatase inhibitors. We agree on SERMs. We don't agree on 5-alpha reductase inhibitors.
Definitely not. Yeah. And the nuance between what really irks me is that people do not get the difference between dutasteride and finasteride. And we've posted charts. We'll post a couple of the podcasts that we've done in the description below as well. But that's something that people should understand to make an informed decision. The concept of total androgen pool, apparently that's a pretty big difference in understanding as well. And the differences in how much DHT and estrogen you get from each form of administration. So a lot of differences. Sounds like Chris was probably trying to get a little bit of the clicks from this, but it did look like his video with Derek that just discussed if there's real health risks of TRT got a lot more views than this. What are the dangers of TRT? So maybe the catastrophizing clickbait is not working as well, which is good.
Yeah, maybe the algorithm is changing for the better.
Yeah, it's a more optimistic algorithm, which is great. So we'll title this as optimistic as possible. Again, if we came off as being, douchey or negative, we're just trying to point out what we've learned in many years of clinical experience. And with our critical thinking and being able to do these non-systematic reviews, we dig deep into things past just looking at the, the latest, greatest TRAVERSE trial. If we review the TRAVERSE trial, we try to find 8, 10, a dozen other articles that have both supporting and not supporting views to that, to think about both sides. So we certainly, we certainly may change our mind, but we certainly will change our mind on things as well. And we'll let you know as we do.
Absolutely.
As always, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your time. Post all of the nice and mean comments in below for the algorithm. And may God give you health and happiness.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.